Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You're listening to Mushing Radio from KVRF 89.5 FM in the Mat-Su Valley. This is Robert Forto, and on the line is our co-host for Mushing Radio and our Iditarod coverage, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It is going great. It's a little bit warmer here than in southeastern Alaska, but unfortunately not all that much.
You know, we got a little bit of snow yesterday. I think they're pleasantly surprised downtown. We didn't get any up here in Willow, and I know the race starts here tomorrow at 2 o'clock local time, but I think they had a pretty good time down in Anchorage today on the three-mile ceremonial start. So it is Iditarod time. This is our daily Iditarod coverage here on Mushing Radio. We're going to be on every night, at least until the finisher's banquet. That's usually how we do it. So before we get started, Alex, for all of our new listeners, can you tell these folks who you are and what you're all about?
Sure. I am a documentary filmmaker. I made a movie a few years back called Mush about the Iditarod, more looking at the culture of the Iditarod and some of the personalities in the race and not focusing as much on the competition itself. I did that because I've been a big Iditarod fan for, I guess, now about 15 years or so. And the first time I came up to Alaska and saw some of the Iditarod, I realized that the news coverage and the media coverage is very, very good for the first three or four people in the race. So when there's a horse race between, you know, for example, a Jeff King and a Lance Mackey, the media is very good at covering that. There's a lot of great stories about that. It's not so many stories about the people in the middle and the back of the pack. And there are very, very few stories about some of the personalities, some of the people at the checkpoints, some of the volunteers. So the more I found out about that, the more I was convinced that that should be a movie. And then I did nothing for a couple of years because it was so clear to me that that should be a movie. I assumed someone else must be doing it. And then when it became clear that no one was, I decided that I would come up and make that movie.
And, of course, for folks that have listened to me, my name is Robert Forto. I am a musher. I've been doing this since the early 90s. I moved up here to Alaska in 2010 to chase that elusive Iditarod dream. I still have not done that yet, but many things get in the way. Almost always, though, it seems to be weather, at least for our kennel. We run a 38-dog sled dog kennel up here in Willow, and we are full-time mushers, and we also work and go to school full-time. So unlike a lot of the professional folks that we talk about during Iditarod, we're one of those folks, like many of the teams in the field. We spend a lot of time doing both, I guess, living life and mushing dogs. Alex and I have been doing this daily coverage, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now. We do it every night during Iditarod, and we also host Mushing Radio throughout the year. We spend a lot of time on history. We talk about the rules. We talk about old races. And like Alex said, we spend a lot of time on the stories. So, Alex, what is the focus of our show typically, and why do we put this on the air other than just to talk about Iditarod?
Well, I think generally our shows are divided up into about three parts. We talk about the news of the day. We talk about what's going on, if there are any particular stories in Iditarod, things that have happened, people who've dropped out. We try to focus as much as we can on the human interest stories, but also paying a lot of attention to what's going on at the front and what's going on at the back. And then every day, we will talk about a musher of the day. So we will have kind of a deep dive into one of the competitors, and although we have focused on some of the leading competitors, these are more often than not middle or back of the packers. These are the people who aren't, you know, your typical Dallas Seavies or Jeff Kings, the people who get a lot of press coverage. These are people who, you know, have usually been mushing for quite a while, and like you, they catch the bug and they get the Iditarod dream. So for a lot of people, they'll be doing Iditarod once or twice. As we've discussed a lot in the past, it's a very expensive thing to put together a kennel and to be able to train and get the dogs in shape and do all of your qualifiers and then run Iditarod. So for many people, this is kind of a bucket list thing to run the Iditarod and complete it. Others, the kind of middle of the pack teams, are teams that hopefully are doing better and better each year, but are teams that at least at the moment are not going to be serious competitors, but they still are people who come into this sport with an enormous amount of heart and an enormous amount of dedication. So we try to focus more on those people in our Musher of the Day segment than on the leaders, just because there's a lot of information about Dallas Seavey. There's a lot of information about Mitch Seavey, you know, and the top mushers. There's not as much information about someone who's going to finish 35th or 40th.
And, you know, with 85 mushers in the field, I think we're going to have a very select group of mushers that we talk about every night. We aren't going to be able to even include a quarter of the field. So it's going to be interesting to see who we pick over our nightly coverage. And almost always I leave that up to Alex. He seems to be the human interest side of this saga that we lay out for the next couple of weeks. So we're going to jump right into this, folks. If you'd like to follow us along, you can follow us over on mushingradio.com. We're also on Twitter and iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio there. We always tweet about the show. Alex and his buddies are always going well into the night. I think they sleep less than the Iditarod mushers during Iditarod. You can always catch a conversation over there as well. And we'll talk about hashtags and things as we go. So let's jump right into it. Today was the ceremonial start in downtown Anchorage. It ran for 3 miles. It's typically an 11-mile trek, and all the teams were out on the various side streets heading down 4th. Is it 4th Avenue or 4th Street here in Anchorage?
I think it's 4th Avenue.
4th Avenue. So it's Front Street in Nome. Is that right?
Right. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So they headed down 4th Avenue, and then they wound down Cordova Hill, then through the woods a little bit, and then ended in a baseball field just 3 miles down. Started at 10 o'clock, and the last musher, I guess, left at 170 minutes later. What is that, 2.5 hours later than the first musher? So it took quite a long time for all of those teams to run that 3 miles.
Right, and for those people who are not as familiar with the Iditarod, the way that starts work is that teams will start every 2 minutes. And that also will be true at the restart in Willow tomorrow. And then what happens is when they take their mandatory 24-hour rest, the time is added to that so that everyone is on an even keel after they've done their 24.
Right. So as they start today, it's all pomp and circumstance. You'll often see a lot of colorful costumes. The Iditariders are there for folks that don't know what they are. They sit in the musher's sled. It is an auction-type deal, so they can go up from anywhere. I believe it starts at $7,500 and works its way up. So some of those big-name mushers can get big-time money for the Iditarod by having an Iditarider riding in there. And a lot of times the folks that ride in the sleds there, Make-A-Wish Foundation folks, and, you know, folks that have that, you know, that dream of doing something that very few people get to do. And I think it's a pretty special thing. But it is definitely a party down there in Anchorage today, isn't it, Alex?
It absolutely is. And part of the reason that it was only 3 miles this year instead of 11 is just that there was not very much snow. In fact, there was so little snow that people might have seen the Alaska Railroad brought in 11 cars worth of snow that could then be dumped onto the streets in downtown Anchorage so that we could run the Iditarod this morning.
So after they run the ceremonial start for the TV cameras and the all of the media and fans down there, everybody packs up their trucks and heads about an hour and a half north at about mile 70 on the Parks Highway here in Willow. I guess we could be considered the mushing capital of the world here. And tomorrow morning they will start off on Willow Lake. It started there every year for, I guess, the past 10, 11 years, except for last year when they had the restart in Fairbanks. And then they hit the trails there, and we're going to talk much more about that tomorrow, but they hit the trails and then onto the river and then pretty much into the unknown. With just a few miles outside of Willow, you're really out there by yourself.
Right. And as soon as you you're a few miles into it, you are off the road system. So you are not somewhere, you're somewhere that either has to be reached by plane or by snow machine. So they are really going out into the middle of nowhere. And of course, in Willow, there are a lot of people gathered by the start, and then you go through three lakes, and usually there are a lot of people on each of the lakes, and there are certain parties that happen every year, and people will cheer all of the teams who come by. But once you get maybe 10 or 12 miles onto the trail, you are not in a place where there are a lot of people. And so there's a lot of crowds at the beginning, and then very quickly you get into an area where you're just not going to see a lot of bystanders or a lot of fans. You are in the woods.
So, Alex, we're about halfway through our show here. We do a half-hour show on our Iditarod coverage, and you can also find that here in the Valley on 89.5 KVRF. You can listen to us every night over there. But we want to touch on something that's caused a heck of a lot of conversation in the last couple of weeks. It's become known as Rule 53 or the gag order rule. I know you want to mention a little bit about that before we jump into the other topics tonight.
Right. So this is both a new rule and not a new rule. It's there has always been a rule that mushers are, I don't know exactly what the wording is, but mushers basically are not allowed to say things that will damage the race, that will be detrimental to the Iditarod itself or the Iditarod Trail Committee. What is new this year is that they've also added "and their sponsors." So this covers the period from when someone signs up for the Iditarod to 45 days after the race ends. So during that time, you can't say anything critical of the Iditarod or its sponsors. And a lot of people are saying that this is ridiculous, and mushers in general and Alaskan mushers in particular are known to be rugged individualists, and they don't like being told what they can and cannot do or what they can and cannot say. Some people are speculating that this might be related to the Donlin Gold Mine Company, which is a major sponsor this year, and they are proposing putting a mine in parts of the historic Iditarod Trail. And people are speculating that perhaps the Iditarod doesn't want to get on the bad side of Donlin, who is giving them a lot of money. Jeff King, I think, had one of the best posts about this, where he said a couple days ago, "You all knew what the rule was when you signed up, so either follow it or start your own race."
Right. You know, what I found interesting, I read through some articles this morning, and a lot of them had mentioned a very poignant point where they said that unlike other professional sports, you know, soccer or football, baseball, hockey, whatever, all the athletes typically have some type of PR person or media person that handles their comments to the media and whatnot. And it just isn't that way in mushing. You know, they're at a checkpoint, they're tired, they're worn out, things from the trail have happened. They don't have somebody to speak to them, so they have to speak themselves. So I guess there's no immediate filter. There are no press releases that folks release. And, you know, things are just out there and said. And, you know, I'm sure you've done it, I've done it. We've all said things that we shouldn't have said, but they just happen to come out. And I think, unfortunately, in this sport, we are a little bit more vocal than most because we are so dependent on our dogs and on the logistics of things as it works. I just hope, as many articles have pointed out, we don't want to see a heck of a lot of no comments to questions from the media. I think that's going to hurt the Iditarod more than it helps.
Right. And, you know, I think the other point to make is that a lot of times, especially either in the middle of a race or right after a race, mushers are just completely exhausted. And sometimes they say things that, you know, they are much less guarded than they might be if they were fresh and had slept. In addition to that, mushers are just much more accessible than the top people in other sports. You know, you can very easily get to someone like Lance Mackey or John Baker or Dallas Seavey and talk to them and get them to comment on something. And if you think about the top athletes in, you know, professional football or professional baseball, it is very, very difficult to get to them. And even if you did get to them, they are much more media savvy and will be a lot more careful and guarded with their answers. And mushers generally are straightforward, and they will just say what is on their mind and what they really believe.
You know, what I hope we don't lose, and I think what mushing is about, and the Iditarod in particular, is the stories. And that's why you and I do this. This is why so many people follow this race. It's because of the stories out there. And I think if a lot of that is filtered, good, bad, or indifferent, I think that's going to really change the way people interact with the race, the way that they come to watch the race or follow the race on however they're doing it. It is a story-driven sport, unlike, you know, football or basketball or baseball. You often watch sports on TV for the commentary from the talking heads in the booth. But this is truly a story of, at this point, 85 individuals out there on the trail, and every one of them are out there for a different reason. I just hope we don't lose that.
Right, me too. My general thought, and maybe I'm giving the ITC too much credit, but my hope is that this rule is put into place just to keep people from doing something outrageous, and that it's not going to be enforced on any little minor thing that someone might say. Because, as you said, we don't want this to have a chilling effect. We want people to still be able to give their opinions and be honest, and that's part of what makes mushing really exciting.
So we'll see how it works, at least over the next 2 weeks, and see if anybody, I guess, is found guilty of this rule. You know, there was a lot of interesting rules last year. We talked about on our last episode the infamous iPod Touch rule, as it's been broken down over the last couple of, at least over the last mushing season, and how that's worked out. It'd be interesting to see how things play out. So, Alex, we've got about 10 minutes left. Do you have a musher for this evening that you want to cover, or do you want to cover something else?
I wanted to cover something else. I've got a number of facts about the race, the field this year, and the race in general. We've often heard the statement that more people have summited Mount Everest than have finished the Iditarod. And in 43 years, there have been 797 people who have finished Iditarod, of which 126 are women. So fewer than 800 people have ever finished the Iditarod Trail sled dog race. And
wow.
In a good year, 250, approximately 250, sometimes 300 people will summit Mount Everest. So you can get in 3 or 4 years more people who have completed the climb to the top of Mount Everest than have ever completed the Iditarod in over 40 years. This year, as you said, we've got 85 teams. We have 17 rookies. There are 8 teams from Norway, which is, we always talk about how there's a very vocal group up in Willow and around the country who root for the Norwegians. This year they have 8 Norwegian teams, including Robert Sorley, who won the race twice in the early 2000s. And when I first started really getting into Iditarod and concentrating on Iditarod, that was the year that he won for the first time. We have 17 rookies this year, 7 past champions out of the 85, and almost a third of the field are women. So we have a lot of really good and exciting female mushers. I think it's going to be a really, really exciting race. Because of the low snow, I think it's going to likely be a very difficult and physically challenging race for a lot of the teams. We saw in 2014 that there were a lot of people who scratched in the first third of the race. Out of 85, I think we might see 30 or 35 people scratch because it's just going to be that difficult. And I wanted to point out that in low snow conditions, generally speaking, the dogs are relatively okay. The dogs are fine. The dogs train, all through the year on no snow, but it's very, very difficult on the humans, and they get really banged up, and they get bumped around, and if they fall off the sled or if the sled tips over, there's nothing really to cushion them besides the ground. So this is going to be a very difficult race for a lot of people, and I think we're going to see a lot of people who, either are rookies this year or maybe were rookies last year and completed the race but have never gone through the Dalzell Gorge or the really difficult parts in the beginning of the race. I think they're going to have a lot of problems with it.
And, of course, no matter what the snow conditions are, especially in the low snow years, the race trail just gets torn up as so many teams run over it. Typically, it's from the drag mat and the brake. It just tears up the sled. Often, the drag mat on the sled is a piece of snowmobile track. So, for folks that have ridden snow machines, just how much churning that does on a trail. They do the best job that they can, but for those in the middle to the back of the pack, that trail is much, much different than it is for the first third of the pack. Alex had mentioned that over a third of the teams are women. It's 26 women this year that are going to be running in the race, and we also have racers, I believe, from Germany as well as Britain. So we have people from all over the world that are doing it this year. You'll often find the Scandinavians. They always have a pretty good contingent out there. But it's been a while since we've had a Brit out there. I know Waddy McDonald from the UK ran several years ago, and he is in town and visiting folks. He's actually on his honeymoon, Alex. I don't know if you know that.
I did. I only knew that because I saw a bunch of pictures on Facebook today. Waddy McDonald is just a fantastic guy, a really big personality, and we are hoping that he will come back and race the Iditarod again, but it's really good that he's up in Alaska.
All right, so let's jump into some predictions, and what I would like to hear from you, if they're not in your top five, I would like to hear possibly the top five, then the top woman musher, whether she's in your top five or not, and then top rookie. Where do they fall in, if I can kind of put you on the spot? I know we didn't talk about this before. And then if we have time, I'll give my predictions. Otherwise, we'll do it tomorrow.
Okay, so here are my predictions. I'll start first with the top female finisher. I think it's going to be Jessie Royer. In thinking about this race, I think she has a chance to win this year. We talk a lot about Allie Zirkel, who finished second 3 years in a row. I don't think this is going to be her year. Traditionally, she shares a kennel with her husband, Alan Moore, and traditionally he will run their A-team in the Yukon Quest, and then she'll run that A-team in the Iditarod. This year, it's a little bit different. She's not taking the lead dog that was Alan's lead dog on the Quest, and she said that this is very much a rebuilding year for her. So she's kind of a wild card for me, but I would not see her having as strong a finish this year as she has. So that said, without going into who will finish where, I think my top five this year are Jessie Royer, Jeff King, Dallas Seavey, Brent Sass, and Yur Olsen. And I think any one of those could very easily win the race this year. Having said that, for number 6 through 10, and again, this isn't strictly in order, I think Wade Mars, Hugh Neff, who's coming off a Yukon Quest win, Mitch Seavey, Travis Beals, and Sigrid Ekvall.
And what about a rookie? Do you have one right off the top?
I don't have one off the top. Sigrid is a rookie, isn't she?
I believe she's ran it before. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I don't have a rookie off the top of my head.
Hey, we'll get to it tomorrow for sure. We'll definitely figure out who's running where. Since we do have time, I'm going to go right off the top of my head in terms of the female mushers. I am also going to say Jessie Royer for my top spot for the woman. I do think Allie will be a contender, but she's in that five-year cycle that we talked about before. Almost every kennel has that sort of five-year cycle where they're just rocking and rolling. You saw it for years with Lance. You saw it with Robert Sorley, as we talked about. You saw it with Doug Swingley several years ago. And I think that's where Allie was the last few years, and I think this is a rebuilding year. So she is in my top 10, but I don't believe she's going to be the top woman this year. I do think it will be Jessie. I also like to watch Ryan Olsen. I think that she's a real up-and-comer in terms of the women. She is not a rookie either. The rest of my top 10, I would have to say, what's interesting, Alex, I don't know if you know this, but there's three Reddingtons that are running this year. I think the first time ever that there are three Reddingtons running at the same time. Robert, Ray, and Ryan are all running in this race. So they'll be interesting to watch. If we talk about a Reddington, we'll definitely have to mention the name because they all happen to be ours as well. So Robert, Ray, and Ryan. So very quickly, Brent Sass, Yur Olsen, as you had mentioned, Wade Mars, I mentioned the other day when we talked, and I do think Jeff King will be up there and possibly one of the Seavies. You can never count them out. I don't know if it'll be Mitch or Dallas, but I think they'll definitely be up there in the top five. In terms of rookie, we'll talk about that tomorrow. Very quickly, Alex, we will be on the air tomorrow. Do you have a musher that you want to talk about tomorrow for our first shout-out?
Tomorrow I want to talk about Lisbeth Norris, who is running a team of Siberians.
Very good. So we'll talk about Lisbeth tomorrow on Mushing Radio. Make sure you follow us on mushingradio.com. Follow us over on Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Dog Works Radio, and we are on iTunes. You can get this on any device. Make sure you pull us up and take a listen. We'll be here for the next 2 weeks. Alex, take care, and I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.